If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. There, you got a fly in your mouth, or
yeah, something like that. No,
oh, man, I like your cup, your tumbler. Yeah, who gave you that?
Just someone special.
Yeah, me, me,
yeah,
me,
yeah.
Me.
It's a yeah. It was you, Candace.
It was me. It was me. It was me.
It has butterflies.
This is butterflies.
And I'm drinking iced coffee.
I had mine this morning.
Well, I did. Well, I had my hot coffee this morning. Iced coffee in the evening.
See, I've gone off hot coffee. It's like I can't. I love if you when I can sit down and have it.
Yeah,
in a quiet place or yeah. Just relax and have it. It feels like a ritual.
Like yeah, something. Like cozy.
Yeah, but I.
Yeah, you can't do it when you're.
I can't do that really in the morning rush of everything. Yeah. I guess I could. Make me some coffee when I got home from dropping the girls off at school.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm so eager to like get to my computer and
yeah,
answer emails and all that stuff.
Well, just have it ready when you get home and then pour yourself a cup and sit down.
That's a good idea.
I start my day, you know, whether I go to the gym or not. Mm-hmm. I will have a hot cup of coffee and read my Bible and devotions for the day, and then I start work. So
this is Lifestyles with Candace and Elena.
Yeah. Did you need some inspiration?
Oh man.
Yeah.
It snowed.
It did.
It snowed in Texas, and we do usually get some snow every year, like the flurries or sleet sometimes.
Yeah.
But it snowed quite a bit, and we built a snowman.
Yeah, did the girls sing the song?
Yeah, we all did.
Okay,
we all sang it. He had grape eyes.
Oh yeah, I saw the pictures.
He had a I was gonna say a corn cob nose. What is that? He had a carrot nose.
Okay.
And we tried to use gummies for his mouth, but they wouldn't stay.
Oh,
they just kind of froze and like got wet. And
oh,
because our snow was like slush. It was kind of like slushy.
Right.
So we used a piece of grass.
Oh, well, that'll do. That'll do.
Yeah. He was cute.
Yeah. I asked Grayson if he wanted to build one, but he's too cool.
Oh, so yeah.
He's like, not this year. Like, I'll go outside and watch you make one.
Okay. Like, I'm not doing that.
He used to be so fun.
I know.
No.
Maybe he'll come back around.
Yeah.
Someday. Well, speaking of snowmen, this has nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
The case that I'm going
We're
to
not
tell
talking
you.
About snowmen.
This does take place in Colorado.
Oh, so it does snow a lot there.
Cold vibes.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's going to definitely chill you to the bone because it's a very gruesome case. I don't know why I've been doing really gruesome cases lately. Like, didn't we just do a Patreon episode that was pretty gruesome?
Yeah.
I don't know, but let's just move on.
You just like to do this to me where I have to tell you to stop talking. So
it's not as bad as Peter Curtin. So
okay.
I promise you that much. But just a trigger warning here, some details that we'll talk about in here are just ghastly. So yeah, here we go. Late one night on February 27th, 2021, police were called out to the Blue Heron boat ramp, which was one of the entry points to the Colorado River in Grand Junction, Colorado. First responders pulled up near the boat launch to see a sinking car in the water.
Oh.
Just off the shore.
Okay. Hold that thought. It's February in Colorado.
Yeah.
So the lake wasn't like... It wasn't over?
Froze, not there. No.
Okay.
Because so there's body cam footage.
Oh.
Of, and I'm gonna post it in the show notes, and you will be engrossed in the scene. I mean, almost everything is documented in the body cam footage.
Whoa.
I mean, except for the murder itself, but it's chilling.
Okay.
So. After you listen to this episode, click on it and watch it if you've got like an hour. So yeah, there's this car sinking just off the shore, and the owner was standing on the bank with no pants on.
What?
Yeah. 19-year-old Brian Cohey Jr. Laughingly told police that he'd accidentally backed into the water.
Oh.
And before he realized what trouble he was in, it was kind of too late and the car was filling up with water. So his pants got wet. That's why he had no pants on. When asked how he managed to get into such a precarious situation in the first place, he said that he took his car out for a drive to clear his head and ended up pulling into into this area near the river. And he backed his car down this ramp. The officer asked some additional questions, trying to figure out why the car was in the position it was in. Like, why didn't you just pull over and just park there?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, it was a full moon and I wanted to see. He didn't talk like that. I don't know why I just talked like that.
I was like, did I just hear that right?
Sometimes it slips.
I can relate.
He said it was a full moon and he backed his car in so that he was kind of on an incline and he could see up into the sky.
Oh, okay.
The officer's like, right. Okay. Yeah, I get it. I get it now. By now, Brian's parents had arrived to see just what a pickle their son had gotten into. Brian was different. He was on the autism spectrum and he had some other things going on too. In fact, Brian's mom, Terry, told police officers when they were there, you know, this is exactly why I didn't want him driving at 16.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like this.
Yeah. You know?
And he's 19. He was a good kid, but maybe he was a little immature for his age. And so she just thought, this is why we can't have nice things. Body cam footage of the night's events shows an officer asking Brian some questions, who at this point is now sitting in the passenger seat of another vehicle because, well, he doesn't have pants on and it's freaking cold. Brian was joking with this officer about how embarrassed he was about all this, his car sinking, his panties flapping in the breeze. And the officer probably felt a little sorry for him. You know, Brian was dismissed from the scene to go home and get dressed. And his parents stayed behind to make sure, you know, they were able to get the car out of the water, probably sign some paperwork and, you know, collect this invoice for the tow truck.
Right.
Actually, multiple tow trucks had to come out.
I'm sure.
One couldn't do it.
That's a big job.
I mean, even though the car was a sedan, It didn't want to come out at first. Uh-huh. It was like wedged in there.
Oh, already.
But yeah. With a little finagling, they were able to get the rear secured and slowly work the cable until the car began to emerge from the water. And that's when they saw something that changed the whole vibe.
Oh, there's another part to the story?
There's a whole nother part to the story. I imagine police officers got a lump in their throat about this silly kid who got his car stuck in the Colorado River, who they let leave the scene.
No.
Who might not be a silly kid after all.
Oh, no.
The officer walked over to Brian's mom, who was watching this vehicle recovery effort from the warmth of her car, and she rolled down the window, and the officer asked her if Brian was injured.
Oh.
Before she left, that he could tell, that she could tell, because there was a red substance on the back of the car that looked like blood.
Okay. Like on the outside.
Yeah. Like the bumper underneath the license plate. And she was worried about him. She was like, oh my gosh, maybe he got hurt when he got out. So she called him straight away on speakerphone and asked, did you cut yourself? And he's like, what? And she's like, did you cut yourself? Like there's something on the car that could be blood. And he was like, blood? And she was like, yeah, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine. I'm not hurt. And he's like, I have no idea. Oh. I have no idea why there would be anything like that on the back of the car. He sounded just surprised as everybody else. Well, it was the wee hours of the morning, and they had finally retrieved the car. So Brian's parents had it towed to their house to let it dry out, and maybe they could salvage it or at least the possessions inside of it.
Okay.
I guess it wasn't too concerning to the officer at the time. He just thought, I'm tired. Like, my shift is over.
No, if that red substance wasn't there before, let's check it out.
Right.
Yikes.
Well, the next day, Brian Sr., Brian's dad, went outside to assess the damage to the car. And the car was, of course, in a right state. There were bottles and cans and in the floorboards. You know, it looked like a teenage guy's car. Okay,
right.
Not to mention it was now waterlogged. So he started cleaning out the back seat. Then he comes around to the driver's side and opened the door, and he saw a wallet sort of wedged between where the driver's seat and the door would have shut. And he knew it wasn't his son's wallet, so he opened it and found the ID of a man named Warren Barnes.
Okay.
He didn't know Warren Barnes. He calls up Brian and says that he found this wallet. And he's like, oh, yeah, I found that at the boat ramp when I was there, you know, looking at the moon. Brian Sr. opened the glove box and water came pouring out. And he's collecting some other things. And there's this big old knife in there.
No.
And so he calls up Brian Junior again, and he's like, okay, explain the knife. What's going on with that? And he's like, I don't feel safe. I keep it for my protection. And he's like, what do you mean you don't feel safe? And he's like, I just keep it for protection. That's it. And he didn't really elaborate. Mm. That was what he said. Okay.
He had an answer for everything.
Yeah, he did. Brian Sr. began retrieving the rest of the items from the car and taking them in the house. He threw away some of the trash. And as he's sifting through the handful of stuff, he sees the wallet again. You know, he's an upstanding guy. So he gently flipped through the wallet and he was like, if I could just find some information, maybe I can contact the owner to let them know we have the wallet.
Okay.
So he found a temp agency card that was inside and called them. And they were like, yeah, Warren works here. He didn't show up for work today.
Oh, no.
Maybe by now, Brian Sr. starts seeing that there's a dot, the blood on the back of the bumper of his son's car. Mm. There's a dot, a wallet in his son's car that belongs to a man who missed work that day. And there's another dot, the knife.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe these dots connect in some way. And as a parent, I imagine the worst thing that went through his mind was, oh my God, my son hit somebody and he, like, it was an accident and he doesn't want to tell anybody. But the truth of what really happened would be something straight out of a nightmare.
Yeah, I think all the blood would leave my body if I found my kid in that situation.
Yeah. He sat on it for hours. He was like, no, surely not. Like, this is all, it's fine. Everything's okay. And then he sat on it for a day.
Oh.
He was maybe waiting for some simple explanation to click, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he could move on and be like, psh, I can't believe I ever thought, you know, something nefarious was going on. And things would click the next day on March 1st when he got a frantic call from his wife saying, get over here now.
Oh, no.
Dispatch, shortly after, received a 911 call from a woman named Terry, Brian's mom, who said she had just found something really disturbing in her son's room and she needed police to respond immediately.
Ooh, I got chills.
Post haste. The operator on the other line calmly asked what she found. She hesitated and almost in a whisper said, I think it's a human head.
No. No.
And the operator said something like, what makes you think it's a human head? And she said, because I saw an ear.
An ear?
Mm-hmm.
She just saw the ear and then called 911. Like, ugh.
So she goes on.
Okay.
The dispatcher asked, well, was it bloody? And Terry said, do you want me to take a picture of it?
Oh,
can
no.
you just please come no. out here? Please, just come out here. And he's like, all right, we're sending someone. And she stayed on the phone with him and continued to speak with the dispatcher and told him that her son was really fascinated with morbid things, which obviously was concerning to her. But she just thought, well, he wants to be a crime scene investigator.
Oh.
So she more of justified it like he's got
you want to see the best
interests. And perhaps this, you know, those types of interests are educational things
okay.
for him. So she didn't think anything of it. And as she's having this conversation with him, Brian pulls up into the driveway. And I'll refer to Brian Jr. as Brian
okay.
and Brian, his dad, as Brian Sr.
Got it.
Hope that's not confusing. But anyway, he arrived home from being at a friend's house, and it seemed like she had orchestrated this whole thing. She had called Brian to come home before calling the police because she kind of wanted it all to come together. She probably had questions for her son.
Yeah.
So she relayed this to dispatch. You know, he just pulled in and he was like, well, you know, how's your son? Is he going to cooperate? And she's like, oh, yeah, he's not violent. He's won't do anything. I mean, there's nothing. And still to this point, Lena,
mm-hmm.
I think she's thinking he got this from somewhere.
Oh,
you know
man.
What I mean? Like
yeah.
the worst case scenario, you would never think.
No.
You would never think. So Terry explained to dispatch that she was tidying up around the house, which led her to Brian's room. She's picking up shoes off the floor. She's gathering dirty clothes and she makes her way to the closet where there's this plastic bin with bags in it. And she's like, I don't know what this is. I've never seen this. So she opened it up and there were plastic bags in there. And she kind of picked one up and it was really heavy. And so she took it to the sink because it was like,
oh, no.
I imagine it was gross inside. I imagine with decomposition and stuff like that, it was liquidy. And she was like, what has he got in here? So she takes it to the kitchen sink. She ripped open the first bag. Mm. There was another bag inside. She could see through that bag that there were maggots in there. And that's when she saw like an ear.
And this was a day after?
This was the day after.
Okay.
His car got stuck in the water.
Right.
So she stopped right there because she could tell that it was a head.
Mm.
And she couldn't bring herself to open the other bag. Well, she's who could? I assume that's what it is, and I'm calling the police. And the body cam footage of when the police arrived on scene is so chilling. When the police officers pulled up at the end of the gravel, at the end of the gravel driveway of the Cohey home, the family was all standing outside. Brian was sitting on this big boulder over by a fence, and his dad was kind of standing nearby with his hands behind his back, and his mom and brother were standing closer to the house. Just as an aside, this wasn't the only Cohey residence. They talk about this in the body cam footage that where police responded, that home was where Terry conducted her in-home child daycare. But apparently there was another place that they lived down the street.
Wow.
Because the dad was telling them about how he cleaned out the car and everything was at that house.
What?
That's right. She ran a daycare out of that house.
And Brian lived there because this is his bedroom.
Yes. So I don't know the details about their living situation, but apparently there were two different houses. The parents were married, so it wasn't like something like that. I don't know. Anywho, so the police are there. And Brian approaches the first officer, and the officer says to him, "I believe your parents are concerned with something they found in your room." And Brian looked off into the distance, almost like he was trying to come up with something on the fly.
Okay.
And then he just dropped his shoulders and said, "Yeah, I believe so." And the officer was like, "And what would that be?" And Brian said, "A human head and hands."
Oh, and hands.
And hands. It was almost like he was able to take off the mask because his whole demeanor changed when he just let it out.
Okay. He's like, well.
He was like, "I'm just going to say found, it."
Yeah. Yeah.
And the officer's like for real? A real head and hands? And Brian was like, "Yes." So the conversation between the officer and Brian continued very casually. It was just a casual exchange. The officer wanted to know where he acquired such objects.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian said that the body parts belonged to a man that he killed a couple days ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At this point in the body cam footage, Brian's dad, who was kind of standing about 20 feet away, just kind of passively listening to Brian, his son, talk to the officers.
Ooh.
Once he heard that his son had killed somebody, he just turns around and just like walks towards the house.
He's like, "I can't listen anymore."
What? Like, I think he was waiting for some kind of weird explanation to why his son, where he got this. But when he heard, "Oh, it belongs to a man I murdered."
Mm-mm.
He just walked away. He's like, "I need a minute. Yeah. I need a minute for this."
That makes me sick for the parents, really.
I just can't even. His wife, Terry, was sitting near the house with her head in her hands, probably trying to wake herself up from this nightmare she was surely in.
Yeah.
Brian continued telling the officer that the victim was a man that recently went missing a couple days before named Warren Brown.
Mm.
The man's name was actually Warren Barnes, but Brian called him Warren Brown. So, who was Warren Barnes? Well, Warren Barnes was a local man who hung out around the streets of downtown Grand Junction, Colorado. Though people thought he was homeless, he actually rented a room somewhere. And he had a temporary job, you know, working part-time at this temp agency called People Ready. The agency that was listed on the card that Brian Sr. found in the wallet. Warren didn't associate with the transients or, I don't know, I think we're supposed to say unhoused people in the area because he wasn't one of them. And he probably didn't want people thinking he was homeless, you know?
Right.
He had chosen to live this kind of life. It was, you know, he didn't have a place of his own, but he had a safe place to go. And he just was living like that.
Minimal and comfortable.
He seemed content. Okay. He really did. When he wasn't working, he would come and sit outside the back of a bridal boutique And not only did no one care that he was camped outside their store, but the owner of the store, Monique, actually gave him a chair to sit in.
Aww.
Because the breezeway that was back there, it did have benches at one point, and the city removed the benches. I don't know why.
Oh.
Maybe to keep people like that from loitering. But she was like, he's not loitering. He's doing nothing wrong. So she brought a chair out there for him to sit in and so he could read his books. He would sit out there and he'd eat his Subway sandwiches.
Aww.
The owner and the employees of the bridal shop had all gotten to know Warren, everybody else in the area, and they really looked forward to seeing him every day at 6 o'clock on the dot.
Yeah.
How you doing,
just
buddy?
Just routine.
Yeah, just routine. Well, March 1st was a Monday morning and Warren didn't show up for work. The temp agency called Monique, the owner of the bridal. Yeah, because they knew her as a point of contact.
Okay.
And they asked, had he been there that morning? They knew he frequented that area. And she was like, you know, I actually haven't seen him since Saturday.
Hmm.
I guess with the business of the day on that Sunday, she didn't really think much about, yeah, I didn't see him yesterday.
Hmm.
And it just kind of occurred to her. But now she's feeling like something's wrong because he was so consistent,
mm-hmm.
you know. So she actually called police.
Okay, good for her.
Yeah, she called police. They wanted to know if perhaps he had gone somewhere maybe to see a loved one, but he didn't have family in the area. And Monique remembered him talking about a daughter once, but he hadn't spoken to her in years, so likely he hadn't gone anywhere to see someone. Monique said that he was really responsible and thoughtful. And if he was planning to go somewhere, he'd have left his employer a message or told them beforehand. He wouldn't have just not showed up. He was a very reliable employee. And even his employer said the same thing. He had never missed a day of work in the 4 years that he'd been there. He took that job seriously because he needed that little bit of money for the rent and those Subway sandwiches.
Yeah.
Warren Barnes was cared about. I mean, even if they didn't know him that well, by the people in the community. I mean, they
knew
loved
him.
Seeing him. Yeah. So back to the day of Brian's arrest. One of the officers takes Brian to sit in the back of the squad car after they realize, oh, okay, that's in your, okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
All the while walking to the car, Brian is exchanging pleasantries with the female officer. How are you doing today? Oh, I'm fine. How's your day?
Oh, she's so nonchalant.
She's nice to him. She apologized that her back seat was a tight squeeze for his 200-pound, 6-foot frame. She turned on the air in the car, and he's like, thank you. You know, just regular, normal. Brian's mother was on the ground, meanwhile, hysterically crying, wailing, gasping for breath, saying she could not believe this. Her other son, who was there, bent down to comfort her while Brian Sr. led police inside to show them what was in the kitchen sink.
Oh, gosh.
The male officer followed Brian Sr. into the house and through to the kitchen, where he saw a tea towel covering a bag in the sink. He lifted up the towel and peeled open the outer plastic bag, quickly confirming to Brian Sr. that he had seen what he needed to see. Mm-hmm. Yep, I see it. And he just walked out of the house. So they called the crime scene unit and Brian was taken from his home to the station for further questioning. His parents and brother followed in their car to the station.
Oh, okay.
Now, on the way to the police station, Brian spoke with the female officer again, just casually talking. He was nice. He was calm. He said, what time is it?
Oh.
She said, it's 2:30 p.m. And he was quiet for a minute. And then he goes, it was over there under that bridge. And she said, what? He's like, yeah, it was over there under that bridge. That's where I killed him.
Oh, chilling.
Turns out that underpass where he murdered Warren Barnes was right next to the police station.
No way.
Just right there.
Oh, my gosh.
She radioed officers and was like, just swing by there before you come to the police station. Because they were all en route, you know.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
there it was. I mean, the obvious crime scene. How did they know? Well, it wasn't just the blood that tipped them off. There was an arm.
No. What?
And as they rounded the corner to the other side of the massive concrete columns that hold up the overpass, they saw another arm and maybe a leg, or at least it looked like a leg, they thought.
Just scattered about.
Just scattered about. While a unit was yellow taping the primary scene under the bridge, and now they had to send a unit over down to that boat launch because now they're thinking, well, that's the secondary scene. Because now we know why his car was in the water.
Yeah. He didn't just...
Exactly.
He wasn't just looking at
the moon. He wasn't looking at the moon. So back at the station, Brian is detailing his crime. And here's where it gets nasty. He told investigators he was curious about what it was like to kill someone.
Oh, man.
Brian told police that he'd always been curious about it, what it would feel like. He had read about Ted Bundy and... Ed Kemper, and
oh, man.
He was just like, I'll probably do that someday. And tonight was the night. He was like, I'll choose either a sex worker or a homeless person so that I won't get caught. Like, nobody will notice they're gone. But he picked the wrong victim.
Right.
So he begins driving around the night of February 27th, and he says he really wasn't in a good headspace. He saw the silhouette of something under the bridge after driving for some time, and he said, I'm going to go investigate that. He assumed it was a homeless person because why else would someone be sleeping under a bridge at night? I don't know why Warren was there that night.
Yeah.
He did have a place to stay. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he was there. Only he knows that.
Yeah.
He described to police that he stopped to investigate, was his quote. But before approaching the shape, he put on plastic gloves.
Oh.
He explained that he wanted to make sure that he didn't leave anything behind.
Premeditated.
Uh-huh. Exactly. He grabbed his knife and he walked over to this form underneath a canvas, he called it. And when he pulled it back, he startled this man who had been sleeping. He began just stabbing the man repeatedly.
Oh, my gosh.
The man managed to cry out, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Like, stop. Brian described this rush of adrenaline that came over him as he attacked poor Warren, growling and behaving like, in his words, animalistic. He told the detective that he was surprised how easy it was to kill somebody. He barely broke a sweat.
Oh my gosh.
Warren didn't really fight back before succumbing to his injuries. He was asleep. I mean,
yeah,
he was probably
a defenseless man.
Yeah, he was probably a combination of like really confused and afraid. Brian cut off the man's head and his hands and then his arms and legs.
With that knife?
With that knife. Mm-hmm. And I'll post a picture on our Patreon of the knife he used. And he bagged the head and the hands in Ziploc bags, he says. Ziploc bags. Mm-hmm. He loaded the bags with the head and hands into his trunk. Of course, he's getting blood everywhere. He headed home. Yeah. He's like, I got what I came for.
Yeah.
So he hid Warren's head and hands in his closet. He cleaned off the knife. He threw away some of the trash that was in his car that had gotten blood on it. And then he lay himself down to sleep.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. But he couldn't really sleep.
Okay.
He couldn't really sleep because he starts thinking of all the evidence that he's left all over town. He's like, his gloves ripped during the murder. And he thought, what if I left a partial print on the knife? And so then he gets up and he goes to wash his clothes again. He had thrown them in the washer. They washed and he's like, I'm going to wash them again just to make sure all the blood's out.
Wow.
And he remembered that he'd left the rest of Warren's body under that overpass.
Okay.
So he decided to go back and get the rest of the body and dump it in the Colorado River. That's when he backed down the boat ramp so he could dump the body. He opened his trunk. He pushed it out. He got it out.
So
the torso. I don't know why he left the arms and leg.
Yeah.
Legs. I don't know. I don't know why he left the other things behind, why he didn't just take all of it. But things went pear-shaped because he couldn't get his car that doesn't have four-wheel drive up that steep boat ramp.
Oh.
So it just kind of rolled back and started sinking in the water. In another room at this point, Brian's mom and a detective were speaking about, you know, Brian being diagnosed with ADHD in middle school and acting out in school. Nothing like violent, but pestering kids, you know, just to get a rise out of people. He displayed antisocial behavior and also had depression. And the doctor diagnosed him with autism and alluded to probably needing further testing for possible psychosis.
Okay, I would say.
So he was showing signs. Definite
psychosis now.
Yeah, he was showing signs of concerning behavior. Brian's mom called around the greater Grand Junction area, but there weren't any doctors willing to see Brian. I don't know why, but that's what she says. That's what she told investigators, that she was referred to someone in Denver.
Oh.
So I don't know if their area didn't have any of those specialists or whatever, but she was referred to Denver. Yeah. And like, I can totally see that.
This is a known issue. I mean, I do referrals for a doctor's office, and it's difficult to find enough psychiatrists, psychologists. These doctors are loaded up.
They are. And to get in.
Yeah.
Like to get in with a, you know, doctors have new patient, like you, and time is of the essence when it's mental health related.
Absolutely.
You're told, oh, you got to go to Denver. And so she was like, well, how much is that going to cost? Like getting to Denver, paying for a specialist, like, will my insurance cover that? And these are all things that we think about all the time, logistically, when we're talking about healthcare and like mental health, and we are thinking about the financial burden and the other burdens. So instead of going that route, her son was fine. I mean, she felt like he was fine. And she's like, I'm just going to get him into some local therapy. And they did that for several months. Oh, okay. And then 2020. COVID.
Oh, man.
And the online sessions that they would offer him were not keeping his attention.
Oh, I'm sure.
The ADHD, he was all over the place. He was like, I can't focus. Mm-hmm. He was uninterested entirely. Mm-hmm. And then he graduated high school. He got a job and he seemed to be doing really well. So I think a combination of he was taking his ADHD meds and his depression meds. He was out of the high school environment. So that wasn't like, you know, encouraging him to pick at people and stuff like that. So she just thought he was okay. And she said, while I'm not 100% sure he was taking his medication, like I set an alarm, I reminded him, and the supply seemed to be dwindling. So I assumed that he was taking his medication. She just doesn't know for sure.
Right.
But she described her son in that interview as textbook weird.
Oh.
That's a quote. She's like, he's just textbook weird. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
He was who he was, and the whole family had learned to adapt to it, but he was never violent. So they just never were concerned about any of his interests.
I mean, this is prime example it how is. Something can just...
They were all red flags.
Yeah.
Something can just snap. But they didn't look red.
Yeah.
They just didn't look red to them.
Wow.
Now, the same investigator questioned Brian Sr., and it was much of the same conversation. The only complaint he had about his son was that he played video games and drank too much Pepsi. He reiterated that his son was not the least bit violent and was mostly just quirky, like Brian Sr. himself was. He was like, I thought he would just be like me, you know, like just, you know, quiet and like me a little bit. So Brian Cohey Sr. had a business that lent free life jackets out to people. Yeah. And so he had kind of built up a great name in the area. And now he was really worried that his good name around town was ruined.
Oh, man.
He and his son had the very same exact name. And oddly enough, they had the same birthday.
What?
Yeah. So he's like, I'm going to have to move to Timbuktu now.
Oh, man.
Like, poor this guy. Is insane. Well, let's talk about the trial. Brian was charged with first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and tampering with a deceased human body. Brian pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. January 17th, 2023, the trial began. The defense tried to paint Brian Cohey as an autistic guy with ADHD and major depressive disorder. His attorney said that all his mental health issues, coupled with the stress of the environment, just all came to a head and drove him insane that night. He was trying to convince the jury that he was incapable of knowing the difference between right and wrong, which is the guideline for a person to be found not guilty by reason of insanity in Colorado. So that's their stipulation. The defense even presented an expert witness, a psychologist, who testified that Brian was not in his right mind the night of the murder.
Well, I don't feel like you can be in your right mind.
The prosecution explained to the jury that Brian Cohey was not insane. He had planned this. He admitted it specifically to killing a homeless person. And the state had their own experts, two psychologists who disagreed with the defense's expert. They didn't believe, after assessing the situation, that Brian qualified for the insanity defense. He is different, all right, but not that kind of different.
Yeah.
He knew. And if you haven't seen this, I mean, if you've never heard of this case and you haven't seen the body cam footage, there's something sinister there. The night he gets his car stuck in the water, there's something there. Yes, you can totally pick up on this, the autism spectrum criteria that he's exhibiting, this kind of awkwardness. But there's an intrinsic deviance under there.
Wow.
It's disguised as eccentricity, I think.
Okay.
Maybe that's why we brush those people off.
Yeah.
It's because we're like, oh, they're quirky. Just, yeah. They're just eccentric. They're just weird, you know? But the way he lied so convincingly and manipulated his parents during those first couple days after Warren went missing, it's so chilling.
Right.
And then when he's confronted about the head and hands, this rationality comes over him and he knows the gig is up. Right. He's like, I'm just going to admit it.
Yeah.
Because it's that rational side of him. It's just, it's wild. It is just wild. You've got to watch the video. So the trial lasted 12 days. And the jury took 2 days to deliberate.
Okay. Wow.
Because they had questions. I mean, they're trying to figure out.
Was he really insane?
No sane person would do something like that.
Well, yeah, that's what I just...
No sane person would just go ham on an individual just because for no reason.
They wanted to know what
it felt
like.
And then just cut them up right there. That sounds insane to me.
It does.
But he was found guilty of first-degree murder. They were not convinced.
Wow.
They knew he had planned this. He admitted as much. And they also found him guilty of tampering with evidence and tampering with a deceased human body, those charges as well.
Well, and he knew right from wrong because that's why he thought, I need to go, I can't sleep. I need to go get rid of the body. I mean,
that's it, is he was thinking about all the ways he probably left evidence behind. You know, he lied about, blood on the back of the car? And you have to think that a lot of that got washed away.
That's
like
what,
the blood that was all in there. You have to imagine how much blood there was. And it probably got significantly washed off of the car when it went into the water. And then there's
amazing
just
amazing
like,
that there's still red substance still on the
red
car
substance
when it comes
on the
out.
Car. Mm-hmm. But the judge who handed down the sentencing, Judge Richard Gurley, told the court that this was the most horrific case he's seen in his 37 years. Mm. He was in law enforcement and he is now a judge. And he's like, this is it. This takes the cake.
Wow.
In Brian's interrogation, Brian mentioned that he thought he might get 15 years.
Oh,
he's like, what am I going to do? He's like, what am I going to get for this? Like 15 years? Oh, maybe 20 because it's murder after all. Brian was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He will never be accepted into a program where they let you go shopping on Christmas.
Well, how do we know that? How do we know?
How do we know that? Yeah, if you haven't listened to that episode, it was a couple weeks ago, the murder of Mary Ellen Diener. Mm. Anyway, I imagine that Brian is going to do pretty well in prison. I think he's enjoying himself.
You know, you might
be
right.
Honest. I think the other inmates will find it fascinating that he cut somebody up, you know?
Well, right.
And perhaps some might even admire him for something like that.
I can see that.
And, you know, for someone who had few friends, few close friends and played video games and was a little bit odd, and he might really relish in having this admiration. And I think he might enjoy embracing that deviant side because now he's got something to talk about.
Right.
With all these, he can learn from other people, like, what was your crime? I bet he's so interested in everybody else. Why is everybody else is there?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I think he's probably.
No, I can totally see that.
I mean, I don't think he will be violent again. I don't think that he will start attacking inmates and stuff because he knows, he rationally knows.
Yeah.
He's
not going to get away with
it. He's not going to get away with it. He had his chance.
That's the thing. If he did get away with this murder of Warren, like if his car didn't back into the river, would he have gotten caught?
Yeah.
And then would he have done it again?
That was my thing is would he have become a serial killer? And
I think so.
In his interrogation, he's like, I don't think I'm like a serial killer. Like, he's like, I don't think I would have, you know. It was like he just wanted to see what it was like. He just wanted to try shrimp because he never tried it before. Mm. You know?
Well, did he say how it made him feel? Like,
yeah, he said it was like easy. I mean, he just couldn't believe how easy it was. And it's just like my heart breaks for Warren's family just to know that he was living like that at the time and didn't have a close relationship with his
daughter,
family, his daughter. And I imagine that there's a lot of guilt and I don't know. I mean,
who knows what their family dynamic.
Who knows what the dynamic was and who knows the situation. Why he chose to live that way and not near his family and be close with his family. But whatever the reason, he didn't deserve
absolutely
to go
not.
Out like that.
No.
He deserved to be able to just live his life. And, you know, the people in the community were just stunned that something so horrifying could happen to someone so gentle and kind.
Aww.
And yeah. They set up a memorial in that breezeway where he used to sit.
I love
and
that.
People would bring like, there was a photo of him there and people would bring flowers and they just came to pay their respects. And
oh, so sweet.
Yeah. So, you know, I see unhoused individuals a lot and I always wonder how they got here.
Yeah.
I don't go, ew.
No.
I just think, I wonder
what's their story?
Yeah. And of course I'm a skeptic. So I'm like, psh. Look at their North Face jacket.
Oh, I think a lot of people think that. Oh, even on Facebook the other day, I saw someone complaining about a guy panhandling, asking for money, but he had an iPhone in his hand. And
yeah.
how dare you, you know? But I'm like, family members give them.
Or there's maybe so many... he lost his job.
Right.
He's still got a cell phone. He hasn't paid his cell phone bill in like 3 months. And he's been kicked out of his apartment.
Yeah.
And that's literally all he has. I don't know. Like, I just always wonder. I would love to sit down and be like, tell me your story. Like,
yeah,
just tell me your story. It's sad. I mean, I can't even imagine having no warm place
I know.
To sleep.
Especially now it's so cold outside.
It's so cold in my house. And when I get in my bed, my sheets are cold. So I have to like rub my legs together like a cricket to create some friction and warm up. And I get to lay my head mm-hmm. on the pillow and cover up and get all cozy.
Yeah, and we take that for granted.
We do.
Aww.
So, you know, just next time you see somebody out there, I don't know, go buy them a coffee or, you know.
Yeah.
Buy them a North Face jacket.
There you go.
Something.
Just so someone else blanket. Can be like, how dare you wear that?
I know. Okay, go to Walmart and buy them a jacket. Who cares?
No.
Anyways, rest in peace, Warren.
Yeah.
It's just so, so sad. He was just minding his own business, sleeping under a bridge.
Yeah, this case is just...
It's so senseless.
It is. Just, it's heartbreaking. It's disturbing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for telling us about Warren. He sounds like a beautiful person.
I know. Sweet. I'll post a picture on our Instagram.
Aww. Well, anyway. That was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye now. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills. Accelerate your team's impact and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.